Hey folks, welcome to Question and Answer with Pastor Matt. This is another apologetics supplement video based on some of the things that we were talking about in Sunday morning, which is the morality argument for the existence of God, the moral argument for the existence of God. It's famously set forth in the opening chapters of C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. So if you're looking for a good resource on that, that's the one that I would recommend to get started with. He lays it out pretty well and pretty convincingly. So we talked about this on Sunday morning. Essentially, the idea is that our own moral intuition, our sense that there is a real right and a real wrong, points to the fact that there must be some grounding for that. That it's not just relative, it's not just an evolved social construct that we all decided to follow. And I think, hopefully, that appeals to most people's sensibilities. There are some people who will object and say, well, it's not logically incoherent to think that our standards of morality might just be evolved morality, even though it's the case that many societies, in fact, I would say all societies, have shared a very broad base throughout history of what is morally right and morally wrong. If you look at kind of the edges of things, you know, you'll find counterexamples of societies who would do weird and cruel things to each other. To the Christian, that's more of an argument for the fallenness of man than anything else, and confirms what our doctrine teaches. But that's beside the point. Those critics are right in saying that it's not logically incoherent to think that morality might simply be evolved social behavior. However, the tricky part is that none of them actually live like it. This is the trouble for relativists, right? You can say that you're a relativist, but no one lives like a relativist. Even if someone has no view of the rights of other people, they tend to have a pretty clear view of their own rights once you trample on them. One Christian apologist actually advises this as a strategy in debates with relativists, is that you kind of find out what's precious to that person, and then you relativize it. Say there's someone who's arguing that, we human beings have been terrible for the planet, we should all just die off because we don't really have any moral rights anyway, and that because morality is just an invented standard, that there's nothing wrong with that. Let's just make this our last generation, kill everybody off. Nothing morally wrong with that because we're all just animals anyway. And then the planet can go on and be healthy. Well, this apologist in the debate recognized that the environment's fairly important to this person. And so he comes back around and says, well, actually, according to my moral beliefs, I believe that trees are deadly and dangerous and cruel, and we should wipe them all out. We should just wipe all the trees out right now. Let's go start clear-cutting the rainforest. Well, of course, this guy objected. But you don't have any grounds to object, right? Those trees are just trees. They don't have any moral rights, especially if you're arguing that nothing has moral rights. Relativists don't live like they're relativists. There are always absolutes that people hold to in their own lives, usually with regard to how they themselves are being treated. But in any case, at the bottom, we're all absolutists. So the argument for morality isn't saying it's logically incoherent to believe in morality just being completely relative, but it is saying that, practically speaking, no one does it. And that should tell us something. It should tell us that we are wired to think that there are absolutes. And it seems to follow that there's very good reason to believe that there are absolutes. But let's follow that up with a little bit of philosophy. I promised you last week that this week would be, you know, not physics and cosmology, not molecular biology, not philosophy again, but would just appeal to your own intuitions about life and yourselves. Well, that promise only applies to Sunday morning. Here I'm going to talk about philosophy. There's a famous old philosophical problem which helps us get to the nut of what what this issue of morality and the goodness of God means and how we handle it. It's called the Euthyphro Dilemma, and it's trotted out every now and then by atheists and agnostics as kind of a gotcha question for Christians. An ancient philosophical problem for which they think there is no possible grounds for a Christian to answer this reasonably. And it presents two choices, right? It's an ancient problem because it's from a dialogue of Plato. So in the dialogue, Socrates is talking with Euthyphro, and they're trying to suss out together what's the ground for our beliefs in piety. Are they something that the gods decree, or God decrees? Are they something that's an absolute standard in themselves, to which even the gods are beholden? So these are your two options. Option A, morality, goodness, is just what God commands. God commands it, therefore it is right. Okay? In that case, morality is kind of arbitrary. That's a problem. For instance, what if God decided on a whim to say, hey, I'm bringing back burnt offerings, and this time it's not animals, this time I want you all to sacrifice living human children to me. Does that make it right? Because God commands it? Is everything he commands right simply because he commands it? In that case, goodness is completely arbitrary. It really has no meaning. It is simply God's capricious will. Christians aren't comfortable with option A, for obvious reasons. Option B says that, well, then goodness is an absolute standard in and of itself. Goodness is good because it is good. And even God must recognize the goodness of goodness, and that is why he commands it. Christians also aren't comfortable with this because it makes something external impinging upon the divine sovereignty of God. If you choose option B, God is not sovereign. He is beholden to submit to an external standard beyond himself. So that's the Euthyphro dilemma. Is goodness good because God says it is? Or is goodness good because it's good in and of itself? It seems like a tricky one, doesn't it? But in point of fact, it is tricky in the sense that it's sort of a trick question, in that it leads you to believe there's only two options. There's actually three. It's a little bit like another old philosophical riddle. And maybe you've heard this one. This one says, can God create a rock so big that he cannot move it? Can God create a rock so big that he cannot move it? Well, let's think through the options. Option A, yeah, he can do anything, so he can create that rock. But if you choose that, then all of a sudden, oh, here's a rock that he can't move. There's something he can't do. So option B, no, he can't create that rock because he can move any size of rock. Well, whoops, you're in the same problem here. Once again, you're saying God can't do something. Either God can't create the rock or he can't move the rock. But in either case, God's sovereign power is limited. This, I say, is a trick question because those aren't the only two options. The third option is the question is nonsense. And it's nonsense because it's based on a false hypothetical. A false hypothetical. And that essentially what the question is doing is it's forcing us to ask if God can do something which is logically impossible. And the answer to that is no. Did you know that there are things that God can't do? Pastor Matt is here to tell you about them today. There are things God can't do. God can't do things that are logically impossible. But that's not actually a limitation on his power or his freedom. God can do anything that can be done. Anything that can be done. Anything that is logically possible. God can do it. But God can't do logically impossible things. That's not a limitation of his sovereignty. That's just me saying nonsense is nonsense. And nonsense is not a valid argument against the gospel. So think about the rock problem again. The correct answer to that is, no, God cannot create a rock so big that he can't move it, because such a rock cannot possibly exist. It is ruled out by definition. This rock is definitionally impossible, because God can move any rock of any size. Therefore, you are positing a definitional, a logical impossibility, and asking if God can do it. So the answer is no, he can't. But it's not because he is limited. It's because such a thing cannot possibly exist. It's like asking, can God make a square circle? And the answer once again is no. God can't do that. I can't do that. No one can do that. Simply because, definitionally speaking, if you make a square a circle, it's not a square anymore. If you make a circle a square, it's not a circle anymore. Logically impossible things do not hold. So it's not any limitation on God. In fact, it is a validation of God's supreme sovereignty and power. There is nothing that is impossible for him to make in terms of the size of an object, and there is nothing impossible for him to move in terms of the size of an object. So the limitation in that question is not upon God. It is upon the fanciful thing you're making up. You're making up something which cannot possibly exist, and then saying, can you do this? Well, obviously no, because it's nonsense. The Euthyphro dilemma is not quite as nonsensical, but it's similar to that problem in that there is a third option. It's not just that God commands arbitrary morality, or that God is beholden to an external standard. The third option, and the one that the Bible very clearly teaches, is that goodness is not something external to God, it is something internal. It is God's very own character that we are talking about, right? So can God arbitrarily say, I want y'all to go start burning your babies? No, he cannot. Why? Because he is bound. I shouldn't say bound, that makes it sound limited. He is who he is. I am that I am. And his character is this standard of goodness. God cannot be anything other than that. Right? In fact, the Bible even tells you that as well. The Bible tells you things God can't do. It is impossible for God to lie because of who he is. Because the standard of goodness is internal to himself. It is his own faithfulness to his own character. Therefore, morality is neither arbitrary nor an external standard that diminishes his sovereignty. It is the glory of God's own goodness which we follow. In philosophical terms, we call this a grounding. Morality is grounded in the character of God. And grounding is a really important idea. Let's think about it in terms of laws. We here in the U.S., we have a government that makes laws for us, and that government can do that because of the society that we live in. The folks down in Washington, D.C. can make laws for us who live in the USA. But can they make laws for Canada? No, they can't. They don't have any grounding to make laws for Canada. See, Christianity has a firm and solid grounding for what it teaches as morality, and that is the character of God itself. But relativism does not. And atheists and agnostics keep trying to make philosophical arguments that, well, we can have standards of morality even in the absence of God. But you really can't. You really can't. If your morality is not grounded in something real, something more than just, well, this is how we're all evolved to feel, so let's just do what we feel, which is most of us think that we ought to be good. Let's be good. There's always going to be people who reasonably can say, that's just totally arbitrary. I'm just going to do what I want to do, right? And in fact, this is the reason why atheist societies inevitably go to totalitarianism. Think of Nazi Germany. Think of avowedly atheist regimes like Stalinist Russia, like Maoist China. They're totalitarian, repressive governments. Why is that? Because if you've done away with God, if you've done away with the philosophical grounding for how we should live, then you need someone to tell people how they should live. And the most efficient one to do that is the government. So the government essentially becomes God. You see, we need God. We need something to ground this sense of how we are to live together. And without God, we are just left to ourselves, to our own governments, which, when they try to play God, it becomes, frankly, a nightmare. We need God. He is the basis of right and wrong in and of himself. So anyway, that's the Euthyphro dilemma. If you ever get that thrown at you, the correct answer is that there's a third option, and that is that morality is based in the character of God himself. It's not arbitrary, and it's not something external to him. But anyway, I know that's kind of a curious bit of philosophy, but hopefully it helps to illustrate really what's at stake in this debate between Christianity and atheism. If you don't have a grounding for your morality, things are going to start going bad very quickly. And I think, quite frankly, we're probably seeing some of that in our world today. As I mentioned at the top, a good book to read on this is Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. Another one, this is not an apologetics book, but if you want to deep dive into some of these issues in novel form, classic literature, read The Brothers Karamazov by Fyodor Dostoevsky. Just some brilliant and very compelling ways that he deals with these questions through the characters of some of the brothers in that family. Anyway, thanks for watching. We've got a Bible study coming at you tomorrow night and a call to prayer on Friday evening. Also, don't forget, we've got our church fellowship event Friday at 6 o'clock at the church. So thanks for watching. God bless.